A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The light's probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 457. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This is a seven-part serial from the BBC from 2015, 7 one-hour episodes. And it's an adaptation of the popular novel by Susanna Clarke of the same name, and this is in a fantastical alternate history world that looks at the life of two English magicians during the time of the Napoleonic Wars.
It does indeed, and it gives us a chance to talk about another work of fantasy, I'm going to say, here on British Invaders, Brian, one of some of these shows that we like to get into.
Yes, absolutely.
So we'll start with our setup and take you back to 1806. It is England, although not perhaps the England as we know it, and a reclusive magician, possibly at the time the last actual practical magician in England, is lured away from his Yorkshire home to be taken down to London and introduced to polite society. He's not very keen on this idea, but while there, he meets various politicians and he's asked to help with the war effort against Napoleon. And then while this is going on, there's another young man who is at a bit of a loose end and has a chance encounter with a strange, let's say, a sideshow performer, a street magician perhaps, who tells him that this young man will become a great magician himself. And we're sort of off with these two main characters from the title.
Yes, absolutely. And we have this magician seeking tuition to go and study with the older magician, and the chain of events leads us to an ongoing conflict and opposition between these two magicians. And also we get the magical realm, the sort of fairy realm, and the interactions and conflict with one of its rulers as well.
And while all this conflict is going on, we also get repeated mentions of a mythical magical figure, the Raven King. Will the actions of the two magicians lead to the return of the Raven King to England? We will find out as we progress with this series.
Yes, indeed. So we should look at some of the characters.
Well, let's start with the title characters. I will start with Mr. Gilbert Norrell, played by the great Eddie Marsan. Gilbert Norrell is, at the start of our story, the only practitioner of practical magic in England. Magic is believed to have died out, but he is a reclusive man. He wants to be left alone to collect and study his magical books. But he's rather forced into the spotlight with a demonstration of magic, and that will take him, as I say, to London society.
Yes, indeed. And then going along with him, we have Jonathan Strange, also from the title, played by Bertie Carvel, a charismatic young man who is trying to decide what his career should be, and he settles on magic, becoming a magician, when he receives a prediction from a street magician saying that he would become a great magician. And he soon makes it clear that he is very good at it. He has some considerable talent for doing magic.
Now, part of the reason that Mr. Norrell is forced down to London is because of the character John Childermas, played by Enzo Silenti. He is Norrell's servant and sort of assistant, and very keen for his master to become widely known, to get involved with London and with the war, to bring his magic to wider attention. And he's a fascinating character who we'll also learn a great deal more about as we go on with this series. Again, with Childermas, there's more to him than meets the eye as well, Brian.
Yes, he starts as a foil to one of the main characters, to Norrell, but there is a lot more there. Vinculus, played by Paul Kay, is a sideshow performer and hustler who does tarot card readings, but also seems to know a lot about the Raven King and his prophesied return. And he's also a character who has more going on that we will discover as the show continues.
Indeed, yes. Another complicated character played by the wonderful Paul Kay. We've got, of course, some various members of London society, in particular the political class. So we have Sir Walter Pole and his wife Emma, played by Samuel West and Alice Englert. Sir Walter Pole is the Minister of War who seeks the magician's help with England's defences, but who is then distracted by his wife's very sudden and severe illness and her premature death, it seems. Samuel West we've encountered a few times on this podcast, and great to see him back here again.
Yes, absolutely. I remember we talked about him in Random Quest, and then again in The Midwich Cuckoos, so a lot of John Wyndham connections for him, it seems.
It seems, yes.
The Gentleman, played by Mark Warren, is a magical fairy king, and we don't have a name for him, so he's sometimes referred to as the Gentleman. He can only be seen by some of the characters and only at certain times, and is a mysterious and sinister type of figure who enters into a deal with Mr. Norrell. And this is part of how things work with magic, that we have these deals with these fairy characters, and you have to be careful with what's in those deals and what you're giving up. We also saw Mark Warren as a villainous assassin in Hogfather, so he does a nice job as a villain.
He does indeed. Yeah, stay tuned possibly for more villainous performance from Mark Warren. But yeah, he's fantastic as the Gentleman. And as you say, Brian, you have to be very careful when you make deals with rulers of the fairy world.
Yes, that's certainly something we see here.
And there are, I would say, there's a large cast. There's lots of characters in this show. We'll touch on one or two more as we go along, perhaps.
Yes, there are definitely lots of characters and some quite complex things going on here between the characters. Restoring practical magic does not go smoothly. It doesn't go smoothly for anyone. And there are consequences to everyone's actions, and most notably, Norrell makes a deal with the Gentleman, this fairy king, to bring Lady Pole back from the dead. And there is a cost to Norrell in doing that, but there is especially an enormous cost to Lady Pole herself.
Certainly is, because it leads to what I'm going to describe as a sort of classic fairy tale situation where Emma, Lady Pole, and her servant Stephen are transported to the fairy world, to the Gentleman's ballroom every night, where they must dance with the Gentleman and other magical guests through the night. I remember there's a European folktale where this happens and the princesses return the next morning always shattered because they've been dancing all night. And this does have knock-on effects on Lady Emma Pole. In fact, I think we would say it drives her, if not to the brink of madness, actually into a very severe mental health crisis. And I'd also say, Brian, there seems to be some enchantment, because when she tries to explain to people what is happening, her words come out as sort of magical gobbledygook fairy tales. And this, of course, just gives everybody else back in the non-fairy world the idea that she is unfortunately not very well.
Yes, it very much is something where she can't say what's actually happening to her without convincing people through this word salad that comes out that she's in fact mad and in fact much worse than she actually is. Jonathan Strange is studying with Mr. Norrell, but when the older magician declines an order to join the Duke of Wellington's army in Portugal, Strange is sent instead and proves himself to be very capable and to be invaluable to the war effort there.
Yeah, he does indeed. He becomes although they treat him initially with suspicion and contempt, he becomes very useful to the Duke and these officers and the rest of the army.
Yes. And part of the deal, he took some of Gilbert Norrell's magical books with him, or books of magic with him. And those books are considered incredibly valuable to Norrell. He values them above anything else. And Strange taking some of them, and some of those are lost in the process, this becomes a big deal, and this leads to some of the growing tension between these two men, these two magicians.
Indeed, yes.
Meanwhile, this fairy king has encountered Jonathan Strange's wife, Arabella, and sets out on a plan to lure her into the fairy world and to take her as a type of prisoner.
Yes, what a strikingly attractive woman, says the gentleman when he sees her. And yeah, that's going to lead to all sorts of problems for the Stranges. And of course, there's a variety, as we've said, a variety of other characters who are in there and are caught up in this magical world. Some of them are trying to profit from the return of English magic, various hangers-on in London. Some of them, of course, are the officers in the army. Some of them, like the Pole servant Stephen, just seem to be trapped up in the gentleman's schemes and magics. I would say, Brian, without us giving any more away at this point, that nothing runs smoothly in the world of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Yeah, I think that's really true. There's always a catch to anything that someone tries to do with magic.
Indeed, magic has consequences.
So we should get into our production notes.
Indeed, and of course we have to start with the source material, with the book itself. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell was the debut novel published by Susanna Clarke in 2004, so 11 years before this TV production.
Yes, and she had conceived of the idea for the book 10 years before that, while she was teaching English in Spain. She developed her ideas into a Jonathan Strange short story while in a creative writing course, and an excerpt from that story was shown to Neil Gaiman, who admired her writing style. He liked what she was doing, and that led to the story being published in an anthology called Starlight One.
And I believe that anthology itself won a science fiction and fantasy literary award, although I can't recall which one at the moment, but it was very popular. And Susanna Clarke carried on writing and sort of elaborating her ideas into this novel. She managed to finish the book back here in England while working as an editor of cookery books, of all things, in Cambridge, not too far from where I am at the moment. And perhaps because of the attention that her ideas had received while she was on this creative writing course, and the fact that the people organising the course had connections with already established authors, that the book was picked up by the publisher Bloomsbury, now probably most notable then at the time and since as being the publisher of the Harry Potter novels, and they offered her a £1 million advance for the book. So the buzz, even before its publication, was huge, and they planned a huge marketing campaign for the release of the book. Perhaps partly because of that and because of the style of the book itself, it was enormously successful on publication and became a bestseller and was extremely well reviewed. And I noted that one of the reviews came from Neil Gaiman himself. And I think it's worth mentioning Neil Gaiman's early interest in her work because, having read the Sandman comics, Brian, and of course watched things like Good Omens, this is sort of in a very similar magical world to the ones that Neil Gaiman has created.
Yes, that makes sense, actually, with the dreaming connections and the be careful what you wish for types of aspects. Not surprisingly, the film rights were bought by New Line Cinema within a month of publication, but maybe more surprising, they didn't actually do anything with them. Nothing was done with those rights. And it was in late 2012 that the BBC announced that they had the television rights for Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, and they were working on a 7-part adaptation. It was adapted by Peter Harness, who wrote 4 episodes of Doctor Who, including the Zygon 2-parter, the Zygon Invasion and the Zygon Inversion. And it was directed by Toby Haynes, who has done 5 Doctor Who Who episodes and a couple of Black Mirror episodes as well.
And they started filming in 2013 and they took it on location to Yorkshire. Obviously, there's Abbey scenes that are filmed there. Croatia apparently is standing in partly for episodes that are set in Venice, but also some parts of the 1800s London. It also mentions Canada as a filming location. And I confess, Brian, I don't know which bits they filmed in Canada and where exactly, but I would be delighted to know.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either.
Now, it's a show with magic. It involves some big effects on screen. We've got the visual effects company called Milk Visual Effects, who I note did work on the series Sherlock, but also on Good Omens that we have talked about. And they also did special effects and visual effects for The Martian, the big Ridley Scott movie. So, you know, a prodigious company. And I'd have to say, we'll talk about this a little bit more next time, but they did an extremely good job here on Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Indeed. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell was broadcast weekly on BBC One, starting on Sunday, May 17th, 2015, in the evening. And it was then broadcast on BBC America and the Movie Network and Movie Central in Canada.
Fantastic stuff. So, availability of this series, if you want to watch it yourself, here in Region 2, pretty straightforward. There is a £10 DVD and a £15 Blu-ray, which contains, obviously, the 7 episodes, but lots of extra features, making of documentaries, deleted scenes, bloopers, picture galleries, 2 special effects shorts showing how the special effects were added. So quite a number of extra features on the physical media. I've been watching it as part of my Amazon Prime subscription where it's included. So I've been watching it streaming. It does seem to be one of those ones, Brian, over here, that it's not actually available to buy streaming separately. You have to have an Amazon Prime subscription for this one at the moment. And I can't find it streaming anywhere else here in the UK. I'd also point out that the DVD is not available to rent on Cinema Paradiso. So you're left with the physical media or an Amazon Prime subscription to watch it here. Over in Region 1, Brian?
Over in Region 1, there is a DVD release that sells for about $19 US or $32 Canadian. There is a Blu-ray, or there was a Blu-ray that seems to be out of print, goes for about $80 US now. But there are cheaper prices on an imported German Region B Blu-ray that sells for about $15 US or $19 Canadian. And that's what I've been watching. It doesn't have any extras. It is also available to subscribers on Amazon Prime in both the US and Canada. So if you're a Prime subscriber, it seems to be quite widely available there.
Ah, interesting. The same with the Amazon Prime on both sides of the pond. Okay.
In this case, yes.
The book, of course, is widely available. It is 800 pages, the novel. You, I know, have a copy on your bookshelf, Brian. I picked up a copy literally this morning from the bookshop. I haven't read it yet. I noticed when I opened it that it does include some illustrations by Portia Rosenberg, which I hadn't been aware of previously. And I would just say those illustrations, they've obviously used those for character design for the actual TV show, because looks quite similar to some of the drawings in the book. And for some reason reminded me of Mervyn Peake's own illustrations when he did the Gormenghast books.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, haven't read it. If you have read it, of course, please do get in touch and let us know. It is 800 pages, so it is slightly daunting, I'm afraid, Brian.
Yes, I've heard that it's quite a dense novel, but that it is very good. It sort of fits in the literary fiction category often.
Right. So, great stuff. Let us talk about what we're coming back to next time, Brian.
Next time, we will explore a little more of the story, which is quite involved and complicated, and we will reflect on this mixture of fantasy and magic with real history and how the show depicts London and war and mental health issues and so on. So there's a lot to talk about there.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting stuff to talk about on those issues, which I wasn't expecting from a magical show. But we'll get to that, and we'll, of course, make our own reviews and recommendations or otherwise for this show.
Until then, you can find all of our episodes on BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there. And you can also follow us on Threads and Instagram. We are British_Invaders_podcast on those platforms. So please join us on the socials.
Please do. We try to keep updated there with what's happening on British Invaders and the forthcoming shows. And you'll also find us on the Voice of Geeks Network, which you can find at vognetwork.com, the Voice of Geeks for geek-related content, podcasts, gaming, and so on.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.